Welcome back, everyone, to the Comics Annihilation Podcast. It is a brand new year. 2023 is behind us. But today we have a very special episode. It is the first inaugural TCAP Awards, where I'll be giving awards out for movies that came out in 2023. Some good ones, some not so good ones. But yeah, before we get into that, it is a brand new year. We are starting fresh. Tonight, I'm going to go see the first movie of 2024 for me, Night Swim. And then I'll probably watch Society of the Snow. I'll count that as on my letterbox as a 2024 movie. I know some people got to watch it before, but if it's not available to the public, then, it doesn't really count. So I count that as a 2024 movie. If you haven't already, go ahead and head over to your Instagram and follow me at TCAP Show. That is where I post all of my short movie reviews, short letterbox reviews on my story sometimes. And I recently just opened up a second letterbox account called Vintage TCAP, where right now I'm doing my Martin Scorsese filmography run, where I'm watching all of his films and I'm reviewing each and every single one. That is where I keep all my reviews. The regular old TCAP Show is where I'll put like the recent movies, and then Vintage TCAP will be all the older movies. And I have a lot right now. I think I have like 14 already on there, and I just started it. I've been watching a Scorsese movie once a day. So with that out the way, and let me catch you guys up for a little bit, because I went on a little hiatus, I guess you could say. I think my last episode was the Silent Night movie review. And so the week of Christmas, right? I already had two episodes planned. I believe it was The Boy and the Heron and Wonka. And then I got struck with the flu, which was awful. For a whole week straight, I couldn't do anything. And it didn't stop me from creating show notes for episodes I was planning to do. But then once... it lasted for a whole week, right? And I just, so many episodes added up. I think I had 8 in total, you know, because there was the Iron Claw one. There was the, Aquaman 2. All those movies I had episodes planned for, but I couldn't record just because I was so sick. My sickness wasn't letting me. And then the week later, once I get better, I had work. So I never had time to record the podcast. And with all those episodes kind of just weighing down on me, I just figured it'd be best for my mental state just to start fresh and not have anything really behind, you know. And I am leaning off the podcast just a little bit. I will be uploading, you know, episodes maybe once a week, maybe not. Maybe I'll skip a week just because I'm focusing more on my Instagram page and my director filmography runs. So that's basically where my attention is right now, but I still be uploading a couple episodes with different topics, you know. But yeah, that's where we're at right now. And today is the 4th, I believe. So yeah, Society of the Snow already came out on Netflix. High praise. I'll probably be watching that later tonight, if not tomorrow. At 6 p.m., I'm going to go watch Night Swim in XD in Cinemark. Did not know they were putting in XD. If you guys don't know, XD is it's Cinemark's version of IMAX, which is awesome. And they do it for a certain amount of movies, you know. But I just love watching stuff on bigger screens. But nonetheless, let me run down the categories that I have for you guys to start off the 2023 TCAP Awards. So the first category we'll have is Worst Movie. And we have some pretty awful movies in this category that some of them I kind of forget that I watched just because they were so bad. Some of them were like, there's like maybe one thing out of 10 that I liked in there. But let me name off the nominees for Worst Movie. Meg 2, The Trench. My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. Ghosted. Bird Box Barcelona. And Asteroid City. Yes, I know a lot of people are going to hate me for the Asteroid City one, because a lot of people have it in their top 10s. I did not like that movie at all. Maybe I'm just not a Wes Anderson guy, But those are our nominees. And the winner for worst movie goes to Meg 2, The Trench. Now, this one, I went to go watch in Screen X, I believe. And that was the only thing really keeping me in the movie was the special effect that they had for it. If I went to go watch this in any regular format, I either would have walked out or gone to sleep. It was not good. There were so many awkward moments of dialogue. Some moments that were just straight up laughable, intentionally or not, I don't know. It was just all around not a very good movie. And the worst movie of 2023. Let me know what you guys think about that. But our next category, biggest disappointment. Our nominees are Napoleon, Rebel Moon, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, The Marvels, and Asteroid City. Again, I know a lot of people are going to hate me for that one. And it sucks because all these nominees I was looking forward to. Napoleon, you had Ridley Scott coming back to the big screen, and it just looked like a epic, huge epic movie. And it just did not cut out for me. And then you had Rebel Moon. You know me. I am a Zack Snyder fan. I was so looking forward to what he was going to do with this. His own sort of like Star Wars franchise. And that movie was awful. And then you have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Which I was so excited because we finally got to see Kang for the first time. And the way that they ruined him. Don't even get me started on that. But that one was a bust. The Marvels, I guess you could kind of see it from a mile away that this one wasn't going to do very good. But I still had some decent hopes, you know. You had Kamala Khan coming in. Tayona Paris as a... What the fuck's her character's name? Photon or some shit. And then Captain Marvel, of course. And what sucks is that she was sidelined during the whole movie. In her own sequel, which is really weird. And then Asteroid City. This one was more because I was hearing a lot of people give it high praise and I was going into it with very high hopes and it was just very underwhelming to me. But the award for biggest disappointment, Rebel Moon. Yeah, Rebel Moon, man. I was expecting so much, you know. Ray Fisher was going to be in it. Sophia Boutella's first lead in any movie. The visual effects are stunning. And the fight scenes look like they're going to be epic. And it was just, for a movie that is 2 hours and 20 minutes long, ended up just being a huge mess of a story. I didn't even root for the team that they were assembling. Each character got like 3 minutes to introduce themselves. And then they went on to the next one. It was just all over the place. And you could tell that they cut out major parts just for the extended cut, which is why I hate Netflix for that. But yeah, biggest disappointment goes out to Rebel Moon. And that one disappoints me because I am a Snyder fan. On to the next category. Best streaming service. And I figured this one would be a fun one to think of. Netflix, Max, Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, and Disney Plus. Now, all these had huge hits. You know, Netflix had One Piece. It had Blue Eye Samurai. Max had House of the Dragon, The Last of Us, Apple TV had Severance, Shrinking, Ted Lasso, Amazon Prime Video had Invincible, The Boys Season 3, Lord of the Rings. I know there's some people that really like The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. And then Disney Plus, you know, you had your Marvel shows, Star Wars shows, recently the Percy Jackson shows. But there is one that stands out to me. And that one is, and the winner of best streaming service, Apple TV. I think they just killed the competition this year. One of the things that really ticks me off with these streaming services, or I guess with any studios, is the continuous quantity over quality, where they'll just be releasing so much content and only maybe like three out of 10 of those really hit, you know. Well, I'd say 4 to be fair, actually. And Apple doesn't do that. One of the reasons why people don't go to Apple TV is because of their small catalog of content that they have on there. But every one of those shows is a hit. You had Severance. You had For All Mankind. You had Foundation. I'm missing a few. Silo, I really liked. Fuck, what other ones did they have? The Morning Show, I've been hearing great things about. They just had so... And then they had their theatrical releases as well. You had Killers of the Flower Moon, a Martin Scorsese movie, which ended up being phenomenal. And sure, I didn't really like it too much. Napoleon was a huge movie for them. So it's not like they're releasing these small budget movies. They're releasing these huge blockbusters in theaters as well. And they just have way more planned for the future, and I'm all for it. And that's why I give them the best streaming service for 2023. If you guys haven't watched Severance yet, go watch it. It's amazing. Next category, best score. Godzilla Minus One, Oppenheimer, The Boy and the Heron, Ferrari, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. All of these are great nominees because every single one of them has at least one memorable track that I love from it. But the one that stands out the most, and the one that I probably listen to like almost every day, and the winner of Best Score, is Oppenheimer. Composed by Ludwig Göransson, I believe that's how you say his name. He just had... One of the main reasons that Oppenheimer moves at such a rapid but great pace is because of the score. The score helps it kind of flow freely, and you're getting excitement. It helps build up tension with the bombing scene. At the very end, it makes shit very intense. Overall, it is one of my favorite scores, and I listen to it almost daily. And yeah, all these are really good. Like the Ferrari one, I saw Ferrari a couple days ago, I think, a week ago. That one was really good. The Boy and the Heron was phenomenal. That one was really hard to not give the award to. But Godzilla Minus One, also amazing. And you already know Across the Spider-Verse was a great score. But yeah, the winner for best score is Oppenheimer. Let me know what you guys think about that. Best soundtrack. Your nominees for best soundtrack are Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Creed 3, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, and Air. All these had great soundtracks. Air had a lot of 80s type of music. Creed 3 had its own original soundtrack with Dreamville. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 had a lot of 90s music in it. And Across the Spider-Verse had its own original soundtrack as well, made by Metro Boomin. And the winner of Best Soundtrack goes to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. There were many, many good songs that I downloaded from that soundtrack, like the Coi Leroy one, Self Love, Danger, what's the other one? Annihilate. All of those were amazing tracks. And I think there's more. Am I Dreaming? I think there's a couple more. But yeah, that soundtrack was really good. I wouldn't say it elevated the movie just because it didn't need the soundtrack to elevate it. But overall, it was amazing. And this doesn't discredit any of the other soundtracks. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, downloaded music from that. Creed 3 has some amazing music to work out to. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had a lot of New York vibes to it with Wu-Tang. And then Air had a lot of 80s music, which I appreciate as well. But yeah, the winner for Best Soundtrack goes to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Let me know what you guys think about that one. And then we move on to our next category, Best Visual Effects. Your nominees are Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, The Creator, Transformers Rise of the Beasts, The Little Mermaid, and Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. All these had very stunning visual effects. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 really surprised me just because Marvel as a whole has not been very good with their special effects as of recent. They've been overworking their staff, getting very sloppy content. But then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 comes out and it's just, whoa, like what the fuck? Like where has all this hard work been at? I know a lot of visual effects will depend on the director, so maybe that was the case here. The Creator, a movie that was made for $80 million. And ended up being a pretty good movie. I know a lot of people thought it was mid. I thought it was a great movie. But one thing that steals the show in The Creator is just the stunning visual effects, the Star Wars-like atmosphere, and it is just such a huge, huge scope of a movie, and I was very impressed. And Transformers, you already know, they require probably the most visual effects out of any movie, I believe, just because you have to animate all of these moving components, but at a rapid pace. They're always going to get consideration just because of that aspect itself. And they had really good special effects with their transforming with the cars. The Little Mermaid surprisingly had very stunning visual effects. You know, it's not going to be on the level of Guardians of the Galaxy, Creator, Rise of the Beast. In its own right, it had its like underwater features that were very stunning, kind of giving me Aquaman vibes. And what's another underwater movie that I really like? Like Wakanda Forever. Mostly like Wakanda Forever vibes just because it's a little bit darker tone. But they were really good as well. And Dungeons & Dragons, one that really surprised me, but they had very, I'd say, fun special effects with all the different things that they were casting, all the elements that they were using. I think they did an excellent job with them. But there can only be one winner out of these. So the winner for best VFX, visual effects, goes to The Creator. And like I said, this movie was made on an $80 million budget. And when you watch this movie, you're not going to believe that it was $80 million. It is just phenomenal what they were able to do. The director did such a nice job in commanding the visual effects director how to do or what he's set in mind. And, well, we just got a product that was just simply amazing and the best visual effects work that we had all year. And I know Godzilla Minus One, a lot of the fans will think that that should have gone best visual effects. And don't get me wrong, they have some really good special effects in Godzilla Minus One. But there were a lot of parts in that movie that just looked like, ew, like that doesn't look right. And that's why I didn't really make the top five. But that's another movie that was just straight up phenomenal. Let me get a little bit of water real quick. I know usually I don't do my water breaks, because usually I finish the episode at 20 minutes. But we're already at 17 and we're only not even halfway through. Oh, and I forgot to mention, too, after the last category, I will be doing all of my 2023 movies ranked. I believe I clocked in at about 100 movies exactly for 2023, so I'll rank all 100 movies. Of course, they're going to get very brief descriptions as to what I thought about them, just so we could go through them pretty fast, you know, so that shouldn't take too long. And I'm excited about that, because there's going to be some movies you guys are going to be pretty surprised that they're in the spot for. But our next category, Best Original Movie. And by Best Original Movie, I mean a movie that came out on a streaming service or straight to digital and had no sort of but it didn't have a worldwide theatrical release. So some of these movies had a limited, which means they put it in very small quantities of theaters, usually like the mainstream ones, like the Los Angeles, New York, stuff like that, you know. But your nominees for Best Original Movie: Fairplay, which was for Netflix; Blackberry, which was just straight to digital, it didn't have a streaming service; May-December, another Netflix movie; Tetris, an Apple TV Plus movie; and Nimona, another Netflix movie. And all these are great choices. You guys probably never even heard of some of these. Tetris was one that I didn't watch till way later in the year and caught me by surprise. Nimona was one that I had in my top 10 for a very long time. Sadly, it's not there anymore, spoiler alert. But that one was an amazing animated movie. May-December came out as a recent. That one just stunned a lot of people with how good it was, with performances, the edgy story. And Fair Play, a movie that no one talked about at all. No one talked about Fair Play at all. And it bums me out, because I love this movie. And I tried to get it known to people. I tried telling people, go watch Fair Play. It's on Netflix. But I don't think a lot of people listened. But your winner for Best Original Movie goes to Fair Play, which is a Netflix movie. And yeah, Fair Play, starring Phoebe Denever, I believe, and Alden Ehrenreich, a movie about a couple who work at the same job, and their relationship starts to fall apart once one gets a promotion and the other doesn't. It is a very intense movie. It will have you, like, your heart racing the whole time. And I just thought it was a phenomenal movie that not a lot of people even talked about, sadly. But I really like Fair Play, and I think that is the best original movie of 2023. On to the next category. Best Animated Movie. Your nominees for Best Animated Movie: Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem. So those are your five nominees for Best Animated Movie. All of these were phenomenal in their own right. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse continues with its really innovative animation that kind of blends 3D with comic book style type of animation. The Boy and the Heron, straight up 2D animation, but does such a fabulous job with its scenery and imagery and just straight up art. Elemental kind of has that Pixar vibe, you know, more of like a 3D animation type. Nimona has sort of like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem kind of clay mixed with 2D type of look. Really pleasing to the eyes. And then there is Mutant Mayhem, which kind of was inspired by Spider-Verse, I guess, if you want to look at it. But it's its own type of animation. More so the claymation aspect of it mixed with a little bit of comic bookness. But all of them are different and all of them excel in what they did. But there's only one winner. And the winner for Best Animated Movie goes to, drumroll for this one because it might be unexpected, The Boy and the Heron. Yeah, you heard that correctly. So for like the majority of the year, for like 6 months, it was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. That movie was a lock. None of these other movies were even close to it. No offense to them, but Spider-Man was just on another level. And then came Hayao Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron, which it might be my favorite animated movie of all time. It was just such a beautiful movie about grief, about forgetting, about the past. And like I explained, it uses simple 2D animation that you'll find in cartoons, but it uses such great scenery and such like art with its background. It was just such a beautiful movie. And yeah, it took a generational movie to take away the best anime movie for Spider-Man Across Spider-Verse. So yeah, your winner for Best Animated Movie is The Boy and the Heron. One that I'm really proud of. And then our next category, and this is where it gets into the actor, the actor awards. Let me pull my water up real quick. Be hella thirsty right now. Let me keep this shit open. All right, Best Supporting Actress. Your nominees for Best Supporting Actress are Julianne Moore, May December, Daveen Joy Randolph, The Holdovers, Penelope Cruz, Ferrari, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple. All of these performances were stellar, and it was very hard to choose some. Like, Julianne Moore gave such a very, like, sensitive performance as, well, if you've seen May December, you know why. I guess you could say in the same way, Daveen Joy Randolph also gave a similar type of performance with a lot of grief, but trying to move on with her life. And then Penelope Cruz, which I just saw recently in Ferrari. She had kind of like a scary tone to her, someone that you didn't want to fuck with. Carey Mulligan, kind of the opposite, more of like a very lighthearted but sensitive at the same time type of performance as the wife of, what's his name? The main guy, Maestro, I forgot what his name is. And then Danielle Brooks, who just, oh, she was a badass in Color Purple. But the winner for Best Supporting Actress goes to Penelope Cruz, Ferrari. And for the longest time, And if you're in the awards film circle, most people have Devin Joy Randolph as a certified lock. And I thought that too until I saw Ferrari and I saw Penelope Cruz in this movie. And she plays alongside Adam Driver as his wife. And she's just their son. I mean, I guess spoilers for Ferrari if you haven't seen it. But their son has like passed away, right? And then she's just holding on to this grief and also dealing with the fact that her husband is cheating on her openly without giving a fuck. And well, she just, in a way, I think she carries Ferrari. Her performance was amazing. And I think it felt right to give her Best Supporting Actress. But Penelope Cruz is your winner for Best Supporting Actress. Let's move on to the next category. Best Supporting Actor. And this one will have... This one was really hard to pick out from the shortlist, you know, because the way I put these actors into these categories is I made the category, right? Like, let's say Best Supporting Actor. And I put in 10 roles that I thought were really good. And then from those 10 roles, I had to eliminate 5. And that shit was a pain in the ass. Like, there were some performances that had to be cut out that I thought were still amazing. And it says a lot about how good cinema was this year. But your nominees for Best Supporting Actor are Ryan Gosling, Barbie, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Dominic Sessa, The Holdovers, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Jacob Elordi, Priscilla. And all of these were phenomenal. And I guess, like I said, if you're in the award film circle, there really is only two that have been circling around and are a coin flip, really. But my winner for Best Supporting Actor goes to Robert Downey Jr. for his role in Oppenheimer. And the two roles that I've been talking about are Ryan Gosling and Robert Downey Jr. Those right now are kind of like the two locked in, the two that are fighting each other for this award, because Ryan Gosling is just perfect in Barbie, but Robert Downey Jr. is just a menace in Oppenheimer. And I believe Robert Downey Jr.'s performance was a way harder performance to do. No shade to Ryan Gosling at all. I just think Robert Downey's performance was way harder to get perfect versus a Ken, you know. So Robert Downey Jr. is your winner for Best Supporting Actor. Now let's move on to our next category. Best Actress. Very good performances in this one. And like I said, when it came down to the short list and I had to eliminate 5 actors from this category, it was fucking hard just because there were so many amazing performances this year. But it came down to 5. So your nominees for Best Actress are Kaylee Spaney, Priscilla, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Natalie Portman, May December, Phoebe DeNever, I can never get it right, Fair Play, and Greta Lee, Past Lives. And like I said, many amazing performances. I almost budged and chose another winner than I have at the one I'm staring at right now. But your winner for Best Actress goes to Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. And the other actress I was talking about was Kaylee Spaney. I wanted to give her the award so bad, but we couldn't just deny the generational performance that Lily Gladstone gave us in Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon. She plays a kind of emotionally beaten down woman that is witnessing all her people get murdered by the greedy white people. And she just has a very like emotional tone to her, where she's like, at the beginning of the movie, she's very stern, doesn't give a fuck what you think, and I guess kind of ignorant. But then later in the movie, when she sees all these family members get murdered and die, she's just breaking down and lets loose at the end. It was really a phenomenal performance from her. And I believe this one is going to be a consensus with the Golden Globes, the Critics' Choice Awards, and the Oscars. So look out for that one. Now let's move on to our next category. And I believe the last one for the actors. Best Actor. Your nominees for Best Actor are Zac Efron, The Ironclaw, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Timothy Chalamet, Wonka, Leonardo DiCaprio, Killers of the Flower Moon. And I know a lot of people are going to be surprised when I put Timothy Chalamet in there for his performance in Wonka. And let me explain that. I know there were a lot of other amazing performances from Timothy Chalamet, but I just thought I couldn't see anyone else really doing a role like that. A musical role along with the acting, along with the dance moves. I believe he played it to perfection as Wonka, and that's why he earned himself a top spot. And like I said, this one was really hard to choose who gets into the top five. One that I felt was just right was Zac Efron. After his performance in The Ironclaw, it was only deserving to put him into consideration for the best actor just because he put so much effort into that role. And, well, I want it to feel like it's deserving, so. Your winner for Best Actor is, drumroll for this one, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer. And Oppenheimer is one of those movies on the 4K box that I have. It says it is one of the best movies in the last decade. And I can agree with that. This movie was straight up phenomenal. But Cillian Murphy's performance in creating this mass destruction weapon for the United States and him kind of being like fearful throughout the whole film about what humanity can use it for, what it can result in, maybe the just straight up existence of humanity. He just does such a excellent performance in this movie and one of my favorite performances up to date. But yeah. Cillian Murphy is your winner for Best Actor. I believe we missed... we did everything right. All right. Our next category. Best Director. Your nominees for Best Director are Celine Song, Past Lives, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Hayao Miyazaki, The Boy and the Heron, and Sofia Coppola, Priscilla. And to put like best director or how to make the best director category, it's a movie that gets carried. Well, I wouldn't say gets carried, but highly benefits from the director. There'll be some movies that don't have the best director, but the performances carry. That's not this category. This category is the director that kind of carried the movie, you know. And I believe all these nominees are a reason why the movie that they made is a huge success. But when it comes down to one director, who did I think did the best directing job? The winner for best director goes to Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer. Like I previously stated, the pace of this movie, for a 3-hour movie, a biopic about someone who invented the bomb, you figure it'd be a very slow-paced and boring film. But it's the opposite. It moves at such a rapid pace, going from location to location, but also keeping the story up to date and not getting lost in anything. And the intensity that comes later in the film when they're trying to make the bomb and the bomb testing and all that. And the ending of the aftermath with all the with the stuff that happened in Japan and all that. It was such a great job from Christopher Nolan. And not only did he direct it, but he also wrote it. That doesn't really factor into best director, but he had great direction in this movie. And I believe he deserves best director. And look out for this one for the award season as well. I believe right now he's kind of the consensus best director in terms of the Golden Globes, the Critics Choice Awards, which are really like the three major ones, and then the Oscars, of course, the big dog, the Super Bowl of film. And I do believe Christopher Nolan is gonna get his first best director award. But that is your winner for best director. Now, our last category, best movie of the year. Now, for this one, I did 10 nominees instead of 5, just so we could have optionality. But let me name off your nominees for best movie of the year. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, The Boy and the Heron, Godzilla Minus One, Oppenheimer, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Killers of the Flower Moon, Air, John Wick Chapter 4, The Holdovers, and The Iron Claw. Those are your nominees for Best Movie of the Year. And all of these are phenomenal and spectacular movies. But when one stands out, and I guess it's a reoccurring theme in this award show, the best movie of the year is Oppenheimer. Of course. Like I said, this is one of my favorite movies in the past decade. It is a phenomenal piece of work. And when it compares to all these other movies, because all these other movies are phenomenal. Like The Holdovers is insanely good. Iron Claw, fantastic. Then you have Air, Killers of the Flower Moon, Across the Spider-Verse, Godzilla Minus One, Boy and the Heron, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. All of these are phenomenal movies, and yet Oppenheimer stands out in a league of its own compared to all of these. And that is our awards show. Best movie of the year, Oppenheimer. And yeah, let's give it up for a round of applause. To a great year of cinema, 2023. Now, I'll have to compare, but I think 2023 was better than 2022. And it might be one of the better cinema years in recent memory. We just had so many spectacular movies, many big blockbusters like Barbie, Oppenheimer, Across the Spider-Verse, Guardians of the Galaxy 3. But then you also had your smaller movies like Past Lives, Talk to Me, Iron Claw, all these small movies that no one really talked about but were excellent. So all around, great year of cinema. 2023, we'll probably think of you in the future. But here's to hoping that we get anywhere near the same amount of quality for 2024. And the way it's looking like right now, not too many movies that I'm looking forward to in 2024. There are some, but I'm just hoping for a great year. But that does it for the awards show. That does it for the first inaugural TCAP Awards show, 2023 style. But we're not done yet. Like I said, in the middle of all this, I will be giving you guys my 2023 movie ranked list. And this is all the movies that I saw in 2023, all ranked from 1 to 100. Yeah, because I clocked in at exactly 100 movies a year. And I really didn't start watching movies like film-wise, like as a critic, you know, until really, like when Oppenheimer and Barbie came out. That's when I was like, I think because when I was going to Sacramento to the Regal, because that's the nearest one near me, you know, that's fucking ass, right? I had the Regal Unlimited, so I was just going into 3 movies a day, and that's where I kind of adapted that sort of path to going down this film study road. And since then, I've just been watching a shit ton of movies, and I barely clocked in at 100 movies. But let's start from the very, very bottom. All the way at number 100. This is my 2023 movie rank list. At number 100, Meg 2, The Trench, a movie that we already talked about, it was not very good. At number 99, Ghosted. Another movie that was just straight up unwatchable. Luckily, it was not a theatrical movie. It was straight on Apple TV Plus, but that movie sucked ass. Camp Hideout, a movie that I think was made for like Disney Channel or some shit, sucked ass. My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3, a movie that I had slight hopes for just because I really loved the first one, straight ass. Bird Box Barcelona at 96, coming off of a really good, well, I won't say really good, but a good first film in Bird Box. Bird Box Barcelona was just heavily underwhelming and sucked ass. At 95, Asteroid City, another movie that I was really hyped for just because of the talk going around it, and man, I was heavily underwhelmed by that one. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, at 94, not going to say anything. At 93, Fast X, not going to say much. 92, The Nun 2, although an improvement over the first one, still a very awful movie. Ballerina at 91, a movie that I heard a lot of people liked, and when I watched it, was just not pleased at all. At number 90, Silent Night, a movie that had a great premise, but ended up just being a huge mess of a movie. At number 89, Expendables 4. While some people have it as the worst movie of the year, I still had a tad bit of fun, so that's why it's a little bit higher for me, but still an awful movie. Number 88, Dicks the Musical. A movie that I saw the trailer for, and I was actually really excited for it, but it just wasn't funny. At number 87, Golda. It was basically your Goodwill version of Oppenheimer. A very shitty Goodwill version. At number 86, Retribution. Your typical Liam Neeson movie. At number 85, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. A movie that tons of people, including me, had some hope for. Just because Indiana Jones has had a great reputation besides Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I believe. And it was directed by James Mangold, so you figured it'd be a great movie. No, just dragged and was not that good. At number 84, the Super Mario Bros. Movie. A movie that was just way too safe, and it was fun, but it was just way too safe. That's all I can say about it. At number 83, Cocaine Bear. You kind of knew what you're going to get with this kind of shitty plot, but with really cool scenes featuring a bear murdering people, that's basically what you got. Napoleon at number 82, a movie that just heavily underwhelmed me. At number 81, The Marvels. Marvel is just trending downwards. At number 80, Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire. I just wish this one was better. At number 79, Wish. A Disney movie that just, like Super Mario Bros., didn't take any risks and was just very, very generic. At number 78, The Royal Hotel. A great movie for like two-thirds, but the final third act was just straight up ass and didn't make any sense. At number 77, Leo. A Adam Sandler animated movie which had its moments, but ended up just being another generic movie. At number 76, It Lives Inside. A movie that had a pretty interesting premise and cool concepts, but just failed to execute on anything. At number 75, Jules. A movie that I liked, but borderline liked. At number 74, The Inventor. Oh, bless me. The Inventor at number 74. A claymation movie that was pretty decent, just kind of was really slow pace and suffered from that slow pace. At number 73, The Hill, a decent little movie about a crippled boy playing baseball. At number 72, The Last Voyage of the Demeter, a very slow movie, and I believe it suffers a lot from it being really slow, but it did have Jorge Hopkins, and I like him, and it was kind of interesting. Number 71, 65, the Adam Driver and Ariana Greenblatt movie, which was another safe movie about the world when it was invaded with dinosaurs. At number 70, Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. After a cult classic and very nostalgic first movie, this one was just, it came out the wrong time, like 20-something years too late. So it ended up being pretty decent, but nothing special. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, number 69. Very fitting for the movie, because this movie is just it's the Thor Love and Thunder of the Aquaman movies. Like, Aquaman 1 takes itself very seriously. A really good movie, in my opinion. And Aquaman and Lost Kingdom, the second one, just was very goofy and didn't take itself seriously. At 68, Five Nights at Freddy's. A movie that I was hoping would be good just because I am a huge FNAF fan. I grew up with it. But ended up being a decent movie at best. A lot of things that you could have done differently. But at the end of the day, it wasn't too bad. At number 67, Ferrari. One that I kind of expected to be a little bit better and was a little bit underwhelmed, but the performances were amazing. So I like that one. Haunted Mansion at number 66. A movie that when I saw the trailer didn't look very interesting, but ended up being pleasantly surprised by the end. Number 65, Joyride. A decent comedy. I don't really see the hype with this one. It had its funny moments, but a lot of cringy ones as well. At number 64, Shazam Fury of the Gods. One movie that got heavily overlooked, and I thought was a pretty good movie. I wouldn't say like great, but it was a pretty good movie. At number 63, A Haunting in Venice. A pretty good detective movie mixed with paranormal elements. Kenneth Branagh does a pretty good job in this. Liked it. At number 62, You Hurt My Feelings. A movie that I didn't start watching till I believe December. An A24 movie that no one really talked about at all. And I thought it was... But it was pretty decent. At number 61, Anyone But You. A movie that I thought looked pretty bad from the trailers, but actually ended up being pretty funny. And I liked it. Number 60, Theater Camp. Was very late to the party on this one. Ended up being a pretty decent movie. With some good moments, but nothing really too special. Number 58, Strays. You basically knew what you're coming into this movie, a very vulgar and comedic movie, and it hit on mostly everything. And number 58, When You Finish Saving the World. I believe this is Jesse Eisenberg's directorial debut. I really liked it, and I'm looking forward to what he does in the future. But one thing is for sure, I fucking hated that retro 80s fucking Bo Jackson arcade game type of score. At number 57, The Blackening. Also another movie that hit like 8 out of 10 of its jokes in it. At number 56, The Equalizer 3. You can never go wrong with the Equalizer 3 movies, or with the Equalizer series. Sure, they're not going to be phenomenal movies, but they're always consistent with their action, and you're just always going to go in for a good time. At number 55, Missing, a movie that came out really early in 2023 that I didn't get a chance to watch until like halfway through the year, and I really liked it. Number 54, Transformers Rise of the Beasts, a movie I didn't expect to like, especially because I'm not a huge fan of Pete Davidson, but he actually ended up being really funny in this. And overall, a pretty decent movie up until the third act. You know, it kind of fell off the tracks a little bit, but I'm excited for the future of Transformers. At number 53, No Hard Feelings. A really funny comedy, in my opinion. I think this is my favorite comedy of the year. I really liked it. And Jennifer Lawrence is just killer in this. At number 52, and I know a lot of people are going to really disagree with me on this one, but The Exorcist Believer. In my opinion, half of this movie is really good, building up its tension and mystery, but that second half does take it a little too far. But I ended up really enjoying this one. Well, I'm not going to say really, but ended up enjoying this one. At number 51, Gran Turismo. A movie I thought was going to be really shitty as well. I thought it was going to be like another Sony game turned into a Sony movie type of deal, you know, like Uncharted did. But it actually ended up being pretty good, and I liked it. Number 50, The Little Mermaid. Nothing spectacular, but an amazing performance from Halle Bailey in this one. Number 49, Elemental. Another movie that not a lot of people watched at first, but then it grew on everyone, ended up grossing $500 million worldwide, and a pretty decent little rom-com. Number 48, Totally Killer. A movie that doesn't take itself very seriously, but ended up being tons of fun. Kind of a mix of Friday the 13th with Back to the Future. Really awesome concept. Number 47, Leave the World Behind. Mahershala Ali was awesome, and the premise is pretty crazy. And number 46, Flaming Hot. The story about how the Cheetos got made. A really lighthearted and heartwarming story here. At number 45, Thanksgiving, one that I didn't expect to like at all, ended up being really gruesome and awesome, and a dub in the Eli Roth filmography. At number 44, Scream 6. I forgot which one we're on. Scream 6. pretty good, you know. They're kind of all the same thing, but that's really what you go for all the kills and mystery of it all. You always want to see who the final killer is. Had a pretty good time with it. Number 43, Flora and Son, an Apple TV Plus movie. Not a lot of people watch this movie, but I found it very heartwarming about a woman and her son connecting with music. Pretty cool. At number 42, They Clone Tyrone. I believe it's on Netflix. This one was really cool. It had three of very likable actors, in my opinion. It had John Boyega as the main character, Jamie Foxx, and Teyonah Parris, who I love. Overall, a pretty good movie and pretty funny as well. At number 41, which I recently watched, The Color Purple. It didn't get advertised as a musical, but it is a musical. And it had some great songs, although I do think it suffered from its length a little. At number 40, Dream Scenario. Now, the first two acts of this movie are straight up amazing, but that third act really kind of boosted this movie down a little bit. But it's at number 40, so it's on the better half, you know. At number 39, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. A huge surprise considering a lot of people were kind of had a bad taste after the Dungeons & Dragons in like 1990, which ended up being one of the worst movies of all time, I believe. But this one was really fun. Huge surprise, and I hope they make a sequel. At number 38, Blue Beetle. Another movie that a lot of people didn't have any high hopes for. But once those Rotten Tomatoes reviews came out, a lot of people got excited. Ended up being a really fun and comedic movie. The villain is generic, but Jaime Reyes saves the movie, really. At number 37, Evil Dead Rise. One of those movies that really came out earlier in the year, and it was great. The atmosphere that they create, that no one's going to come and save you, and you can't escape this evil. The amount of gore in this movie ended up being a really satisfying movie, and can't wait if they make another one, honestly. At number 36, The Killer. I thought this one would be a lot better, honestly. The path that David Fincher took with this movie is controversial, to say the least. But ended up being a pretty decent movie. Like, I had a really good time with it. At number 35, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. I am on the minority that thought this movie was really good. Sure, the third act of the movie could have been fleshed out more. Like, you could have made this movie into two parts. But overall, I think the performances were great. And the story was pretty good, in my opinion. I liked it. At number 34, Saltburn. One of those movies that a lot of people are going to think about for the next couple years, whether it's a good reason or a bad reason. A lot of vulgar stuff with it, with Barry Keoghan. But nonetheless, I really like what they did here, and I love the performances. At number 33, No One Will Save You. A movie I don't think much people watched at all. And I wouldn't blame them because it was a straight-to-Hulu movie. But it was about a woman getting abducted by aliens, but there's no dialogue in the movie. And we've had another one of those movies in Silent Night that just failed horribly. This movie actually excelled in it. At number 32, Infinity Pool, a movie with a wild concept, and actually is one of those neon movies that actually have a satisfying ending, and I really liked it. At number 31, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. A really good coming-of-age story with this little girl and her mom. And I thought it was another one of those movies that a lot of people didn't really watch. But it was really good. At number 30, Bottoms. Actually, let me change my mind. Bottoms was the funniest movie of the year for me. With Rachel Sennett and Ayo Edebiri. This one was really funny. And one of those movies that a lot of people did not talk about at all. Maybe because of its LGBTQ theme, but you know, people nowadays, they have their agendas. At number 29, I got Tetris, an Apple TV Plus movie. This one was really good. I didn't expect much coming from this movie because it's about the making of Tetris, but they did a pretty good job here, and I believe Taron Egerton played the role really well. At number 28, The Flash. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this one. I thought the Flash was really good. I know a lot of people hate it because of its tacky CGI. Sure, it's got CGI, but CGI should not determine if a movie is good or not. I thought the story was pretty good, how he's trying to say just be back with his mother, but he ends up learning a lesson in the end. I thought this movie was really good and the action was awesome. At number 27, Wonka. Another Paul King dub. Like I said, Timothée Chalamet. Oh, shit, my bad. Timothée Chalamet gives such a really good performance here. You love the characters. You love the chocolate aspect of everything. What's not to like about Wonka? At number 26, Maestro. The Bradley Cooper directed and he starred in it as well movie. I kind of thought it'd be a little bit better, but it still ended up being a really good movie. And another dub for Bradley Cooper in his directing career. At number 25, BlackBerry. The rise and fall of the BlackBerry phone company. Really good. Some awesome performances in this. And it wasn't very too long, so it moved at a really good pace. And then let me turn off my ringer. It's annoying. At 24, Saw X. One that I did not expect to be as good as it was. You know, the Saw movies, aside from the first one, have not been the best quality, you know? A lot of people kind of just go because it's like really just torture porn. But Saw X brings the humanity into this movie and actually makes you root for the main character, for Tobin Bell's character. And I thought it was really good. At number 23, I know a lot of people will have this one higher, but I think 23 is a really good spot for it. Barbie. Another movie that could have been awful if it had another director. And like I want to say, with the Super Mario Bros., that movie takes no risks at all, right? The Barbie movie is a prime example of how a risk can either turn a wacky idea into a phenomenal movie or turn that idea into a garbage ass movie. Like, it could go very bad. And well, with what Greta Gerwig did here, the risk paid off and ended up being a really good movie. At number 22, When Evil Lurks. A movie that a lot of people didn't watch, and I think it might be my second favorite horror movie of the year. It is in Spanish, but damn, is it creepy as fuck. I love this one. At number 21, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. One that I hated when I first saw the first trailer for it. I thought, this looks cringy, this looks stupid. And then the second trailer came by, I'm like, okay, this looks a little bit decent, you know. Then I went to go watch it, and I absolutely loved it. At number 20, May December. A very edgy movie about this complicated relationship and a crazy story this family has to deal with. I thought the performances were Oscar worthy and the direction was awesome and amazing. At number 19, Creed 3. I love what Michael B. Jordan did here, especially with the fight scenes, the scenery. I love Jonathan Majors' performance as Damian Anderson, I believe his name is. A great character, probably my favorite antagonist in the Creed series so far. And it was just very satisfying, and I absolutely love this one. I know this one might be a little bit lower than other people, and I still love this movie. Number 18, Past Lives. A movie about, what's the best way to say it? You never know, or you could be perfect for each other and still not meant to be. That'd probably be the best way to describe this movie. And it is phenomenal. Really good movie. At number 17, one of my favorites, probably my favorite surprise of the year, was Talk to Me, a movie that I didn't even hear of until it came out. And I look into the backstory of it. It's directed by first-time directors Danny and Michael Philippou, who are YouTubers. So not only are they first-time directors, they're YouTubers. And then they ended up giving us this modern take on a like paranormal situation, and it's just a phenomenal movie. At number 16, Nimona, a Netflix movie that I guess has been in the works for like 5+ years and finally got released. It deals with heavy topics while also having amazing animation. Love this movie. At number 15, I got The Creator. Although I know a lot of people didn't like thought this one was mid, I thought the story, although it could have been a lot better, ended up being really good and satisfying enough for me to give it 4.5 stars, which is usually like a 8.5 to 8.9 range, you know. At number 14, I got Dumb Money, a movie about the stock situation with GameStop, and it was all sorts of fun. You loved watching this movie. You would love watching this movie. I know I did. At number 13, Fair Play. I've already talked about this movie so much. It was such a pleasant surprise watching this one. And it just, it hurts that not a lot of people recognized how good it really was. At number 12, Priscilla, a Sofia Coppola movie about, I guess, Priscilla's side of the story with what happened with Elvis. And I found it to be such an amazing movie, from the performances, from the directing, from the cinematography. Overall, just an amazing movie. At number 11, and this one maybe changed the way I look at the whole franchise, but Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I'm not going to lie, heading into the year, I was like, I wasn't looking forward to this one. I was looking forward to Ant-Man more. I was looking forward to the Marvels more, because I was like, eh, Guardians of the Galaxy 3. But ended up being one of my favorite movies of the year. Well, I guess 11th favorite movie of the year. But it was so good. The job that James Gunn did here with giving us a lot of character studies in this with the main characters, a lot of dark themes, and then also you're either crying because of the situation that's happening or you're crying out of happiness. It overall is just phenomenal. And then at number 10, Godzilla Minus One. We're heading into the top 10 now. This is the top 10 of 2023. At number 10, we have Godzilla Minus One, another tremendous movie. It is my favorite Godzilla movie of all time. And it's actually one of the only Godzillas where you actually care for the characters. Number 9, a movie that I didn't have much interest in, The Holdovers, with Paul Giamatti and Dominic Sessa, directed by Alexander Payne. This movie was just terrific, and it was just such a heartwarming and pleasing movie. It was like 2 hours and 10 minutes, but you wanted to see more of this, and I loved it. At number 8, I have Air, the Ben Affleck-directed movie starring Matt Damon, Ben Affleck himself. I can't think of the other actors. But overall, a great story about you always betting on yourself and it paying off. Love this one and love the aesthetic that they gave it. At number 7, The Iron Claw. Such a devastating story about what happened with the Von Erichs, but ended up being very satisfying at the end despite the whole tragic situation. At number 6, John Wick Chapter 4. Probably my favorite John Wick movie out of the whole franchise. And that's saying a lot because I love these movies. Not only did it have some of the best action I've ever seen in a movie, but it also had a really killer story, great cinematography, and maybe a very satisfying ending to the character. Spoiler alert, he dies at the end. At number 5, Killers of the Flower Moon. Despite its 3.5-hour runtime, which should have been a lot shorter, it was just a phenomenal movie about the greed of some people picking on the poor. Really good movie. Number 4, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, a movie that I had my top 1 for a long time until these others came around. Again, Sony just one-ups itself with these Spider-Verse movies. Like Into the Spider-Verse was amazing. And what do they do? They don't hit a sophomore slump. No, they elevate their Spider-Verse projects. And it's insane. And number 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Despite its 2-hour and like 40-minute runtime, this movie is fast-paced, amazing action, thrilling sequences, especially the train sequence at the end. I love the story that they implement with the AI. Overall, I thought this was an amazing movie, and it was my number one for a while. And number two, and this one just moved up here not too long ago, and that was The Boy and the Heron. Like I've previously stated, a piece of art of an animated movie. Like with a boy dealing with his mom's death and having to deal with the grief and learning how to move on. It is just such a satisfying but also sad story, and I loved it. And at number one movie in 2023, Oppenheimer. Like I said, one of the best movies I've seen in the past decade as a recent. It is a piece of art by Christopher Nolan. I still haven't done his filmography run, but I have a feeling this one might be either top three, top two, or might be my favorite. But that does it for our 2023 movies ranked list. Let me know what you guys think. Were there any surprising movies that you thought should be higher, lower, or just right? Let me know what you guys think. But that does it for our first episode of the inaugural TCAP Awards for the year of 2023. Cannot wait to do this again later next year, next January in 2025 with the 2024 movies. Crossing my fingers that we have a great year of cinema. I know we've been here for about, an hour and 6 minutes now. I'm hoping you guys like this. I'm not going to have too many episodes coming out. I'm not going to lie, because I am focusing more on my filmography rundowns. But I will be posting on my Instagram. I always do with my short movie reviews. It's kind of what I focus on. But I will be making some episodes every now and then. So just keep your eye peeled for that. But that does it for today. Thank you guys for listening to this. And I'll see you in the next video.